leaders change all the time. We see that, don't we? One minute a leader rises to the top, and the next minute a leader falls. And that can be often due to some sort of incompetence, maybe. Or things can just happen that cause a leader to rise one minute and to fall the next. Someone is flavour of the month, everybody loves them, and then the next moment they're out of favour. And that happens in all walks of life. It's a bit like a conveyor belt or a merry-go-round. Leaders rise and leaders fall. So we see it with politicians, don't we? And world leaders. Some last longer than others. But they rise and someone replaces them. They fall. We see that in the business world. I don't know if we've got any business people here this morning, but CEOs, they rise, and then when things are not going very well, they fall. It happens in sport as well, doesn't it? Even if your manager wins a trophy these days for your team, they can be sacked before the next season. They rise and they fall. Everybody is always looking for the right leader. And we see that in the book of 1 Samuel, if you've ever read that before. It says a lot about leadership. God is looking for the right leader to lead his people. You see, in those days, if you flick back to the end of Judges, it tells us that everybody was ignoring God and they were doing whatever seemed right in their own eyes. And it was complete chaos. It was a mess. People were living how they wanted to. And so the answer was for God to raise up a leader who would lead the people back to God, back to obeying God as they should. But it's not gone very well so far. The first king, the first leader that was chosen was a guy called Saul. And his name means asked for. So that's what happened. Saul was the king that the people asked for. And you see in 1 Samuel chapter 15, if you read that when you get home, Saul quickly rose to the top to be leader, and then he quickly fell as well. He failed big time. He didn't obey God's instructions. He made excuses. He honoured himself instead of God. Saul was not the king that everybody needed. He was rejected. And so when we get to the start of 1 Samuel 16, in fact, the last verse of chapter 15, we see that Samuel the prophet is mourning because Saul was not the right king. You know what mourning is, don't you? Grieving. It's almost like there's been a death in the family. He is broken by the fact that Saul's heart does not beat in tune with God's heart. And Samuel is a great person to have a look at his life, if you've ever looked at it before. Samuel here is now old, but the book of Samuel follows him right from when he was a young boy. And he grows in favour with God and the people. But now he's old, and we can look back on Samuel's life and see he is a faithful man. He's faithful to God. He lives 1,100 years before Jesus, in a time of history which we've just said is chaotic and messy, and people really need a man of God to live faithfully, and that was Samuel. He was a good example. And don't we need that today as well? We need a leader. We need men of God who are faithful, who will lead us, who we can listen to, who will correct us and instruct us so that we can obey God. I wonder, who are the people that have had the biggest impact in your life? I'm sure they're people who have been faithful, who have shown up again and again, faithful to God and faithful to you. And that's who Samuel was. He was faithful. And so can I challenge you at the start this morning? Will you be a Samuel person? Will you be faithful in your life? Will you hear those words at the end of your life? Well done, good and faithful servant. Because your family needs you to be faithful today. Your spouse and your children need you to be faithful. Your workaday life needs you to be faithful. Your church family needs you to be faithful. Look at Samuel's life. He is faithful and he's following God. And we see that again here. So as we get into chapter 16 and we meet Samuel again, we need to remind ourselves he's faithful to God and he's looking for one who is better than Saul. He's looking for a leader after God's own heart. And chapter 16, we're going to meet him. So let's have a look and meet him together. And the first thing I want us to see is that this man of God is chosen by God. That's what verse 1 tells us. Can you have a look at that with me? Now the Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I am sending you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided myself a king among his sons." So the people have had their choice of a leader, and they chose Saul, and that ended really badly. So now God's going to choose. God has his turn to choose. And the first thing he says to Samuel is stop grieving, stop mourning, almost like put your tissues away, Samuel. I've got one last mission for you to do. So he's saying to Samuel, it's right to grieve, it's right to be sad over Saul, but I want you to get up and go now. I want you to be hopeful for the future. That really spoke to me when I looked at that. Because don't we sometimes get stuck in our circumstances, even stuck in our rightful grief? And we need God to lift our head up and say, look, there's hope. Get up. Go. And so Samuel is given instructions in verses 2 to 5. And he says, take your horn of oil. That's a bit strange, isn't it? What's happening there? Well, they didn't have refillable bottles back in those days. Once you'd finished with your animal, Gertrude, you'd had your meal, you would cut off the horn from the animal and you would use it as a container. And they would fill it with oil, olive oil from the Mount of Olives. They would harvest those and press them and put them in the horn. And that oil was used to anoint kings. That's how Saul was anointed king. And so this is what Samuel's told. Go to Bethlehem with your horn of oil. I've got a new king from Jesse's family, one of his sons. But in verse 2, Samuel says, how can I go? He's fearful of going. He says, when Saul finds out about this, he's going to be mad. He's going to kill me. And so God says, well, take a cow with you. Go to Bethlehem with a cow. Have a feast and then invite Jesse's family to come to the meal. And so Samuel does that. And he arrives and they have the meal. And look at verse 6. The first one of Jesse's sons he meets is Eliab. And he was the oldest. And Samuel saw him and straight away said, grab my horn of oil. This is the new king. Quick, let me pour it on his head. And God says, no. Eliab was the tallest. He was probably the strongest. He was the best looking of the sons. But God says in verse 7, don't do it. Don't pour the oil on him. It's not about how impressive he is. It's not about how high he is. It's not about how strong his muscles are. I've rejected him. It's not him. Samuel's really old, but he still needs to be corrected by God, doesn't he? That shows us that we're never too old to be corrected by God. Samuel had not learnt the lesson from chapter 9 when they were picking Saul. He looked at Saul and saw that he was taller than everyone else and he was really handsome. And he said, that's the king. And he's not learnt his lesson, has he? Sometimes God needs to save us from our solutions to problems. It's a reminder that this is not Samuel's choice. This is God's choice. And look at verse 7. This is how God chooses. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the hearts. That's what we do, don't we? We look at someone on the outside. When we first meet someone, before they've even said a word from their mouths, and we judge them on their outward appearance. We say all the time, don't judge a book by its cover, but we do it. I won't ask you to put your hands up if you've done it. But we make a snap judgment on somebody all the time. Maybe their age, we make a judgment on their age. Maybe the clothes that they're wearing or the shoes they've got on, we make a judgment on them. Or their physique. Or even the car that they're driving as they come into the car park. We make a judgment. Or where their postcode is. Or their hairstyle. Or whether they've got tattoos on. We make a snap judgment on them. We don't know that person. And we judge on the outward appearance. And God says, that's not how I do it. Have you ever watched Britain's Got Talent before? It's a favourite on a Saturday evening in our house. A singing show, a talent show. And there was once a man called Vinnie McKee. And he was a holiday park entertainer. And he walked on the stage and he looked very ordinary. Very unimpressive. And we all judged him and thought, a holiday park entertainer? This is going to be naff. This is going to be tacky. And as soon as he opened his mouth and started singing, I think the song was, I Would Walk 500 Miles, jaws dropped. People were blown away by his big operatic voice. It was beautiful. The crowds all stood up. They pressed the golden buzzer. All the judges said, sorry, we misjudged you. And we'd done the same. We judged on the outside rather than on the heart. And the point here is, we do that, but God doesn't. We look on the outside, God sees the heart. Samuel can't see Eliab's heart, and so God says, pass him over. Now, does that mean that it's bad to be beautiful today? No, it doesn't mean that God hates beautiful people. He only wants ugly people in his kingdom. No, that's not what it's saying. It's saying that God sees something that we don't see. He looks at our hearts. And so this morning, that means we need a heart checkup. Not for that organ that beats and pumps blood around the body. Not for that one. But for the real you inside, you know, the center of your life, the bit that makes you you, you need to check the condition of that heart this morning. The bit that no one else can see, but God sees. Proverbs chapter 4 shows us how important that is. It says, above all else, guard your hearts. Because that's where everything flows from. So, it will be in your heart before it comes out in your life. So if you're an angry person, it started in your heart before it came out. If you're a judgmental person, it comes from the heart. If you're a gossip, it starts in the heart, the Bible says. If you're jealous or you're always complaining, it's a heart problem first before it comes out into your life. This is a challenging checkup, isn't it? Luke chapter 6, Jesus says, if you've got good stored up in your heart, then that good will come out. But if you've got evil stored in your heart, then that will come out in your actions and your words. And so it's a challenging examination for us this morning. God cares about your heart above everything else. And he says, my next king is about his heart health above everything else. And so this morning, can I ask you, is your heart right with God? Has it been cleansed and forgiven? Is it beating for God because he's given you a new heart? So the next son, look at verse 8, the next son walks by, and Samuel says, no, it's not him either. Verse 9, the next son walks by, it's not him either. Verse 10, all seven of the sons pass by, and the Lord says, I've not chosen one of them. And then in verse 11, there's this awkward silence where Samuel says, is there another one? Is there anyone else? Are these all the sons you've got? And Jesse says, there's the youngest. He's out the back in the fields looking after the sheep. And so Samuel says, send for him. We're not going to eat this meal until he comes. That made them go fast, didn't it? Get him, bring him back. And the youngest arrives. His name is David, and he could be 13 years old. That's how young he is. Look at verse 12. So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy with bright eyes and good looking. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is the one. Verse 13. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. God says, this is the one, David. And the Holy Spirit pours on him powerfully from that day on. I want us to see this morning that God's choice is surprising. Who saw God choosing David? We can lose sight of the shock a little bit that it would have been back then, because we've heard the story of David before, haven't we? We've got it in our story Bibles. We know the next chapter he goes and kills a Goliath giant. We know that, don't we? We know that there's a city named after him, the city of David. We know all the Davids in this room are named after King David. We know the story, so we lose the shock. But back then, for a 13-year-old shepherd to come in from the fields and to be chosen as God's next king, well, that would have been a shock. Our deliverer is this boy. Our next mighty, powerful warrior is this boy. David's not tall like his oldest brother, is he? David's young. David's inexperienced. He's never been to war before. Chapter 17, he doesn't even know how to put armor on. It's quite funny, isn't it? And yet God chooses David. And God still does that today. His choice is surprising. He chooses small things, things that look foolish, things that are weak. You know that the world says, oh, don't worry about that. Look down on those. They're not very good. God chooses those to shame the strong so that no one can boast except in him. That's what 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 26 to 27 says. You can read that when you get home. It teaches us to value hearts and character over appearance, because God chooses on your heart. And that's an encouragement this morning, isn't it, for us? God sees and he knows your heart when you're serving him. It might not look very impressive what you're doing for him, but he sees your heart and he wants you to do it. The spotlight might not be shining on you. You might not look very impressive, but you're being faithful in the corner somewhere serving Jesus, not drawing attention to yourself, but God sees your heart. That is devoted to him and he cares. Keep going. Keep being faithful. Right, we've got one more bit to cover. Are you ready for this? Verses 14 to 23. So we see the contrast between David's brothers and David. Now we're going to see the contrast between David and Saul. Have a look at these verses. And the rest of the book is going to get on with David and Saul a lot more. And so what we see finally, I think this is the last thing on your sheet, is that God's chosen king brings rescue. God's chosen king brings rescue. Look at verse 14. But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and a distressing spirit from the Lord troubled him. A distressing spirit comes on Saul. That doesn't mean that an evil has come from God. God has nothing to do with evil. It has to do with Saul now not being king. So the spirit rushes on David because he's now king, and the spirit leaves Saul because he's not king anymore. He's been rejected. And so the spirit came on Saul because he was anointed as king, but now he's no longer king. David is anointed instead. And this troubling spirit seems to be a punishment on Saul for rejecting God. Look what happens in verse 16. Let our master now command your servants who are before you to seek out a man who is a skillful player of the harp, and it shall be that he will play with it with his hand when the distressing spirit from God is upon you, and you will be well. It's music therapy, isn't it? We think that's a modern thing, but it was happening back then. And the harp or the lyre is the equivalent to our guitar today that they used in worship. So every time this distressing spirit came, then David would play. He was suggested. He's the best one to play. Verse 18, he's given a great reference. He's the man for the job. And so that's what would happen. Look at verse 21. So David came to Saul and stood before him, and he loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. As a result, a friendship struck up. Saul loves David. He becomes loyal. He becomes committed. They become friends with each other. And he's so pleased with David. Verse 22, he begs Jesse, can he stay and serve me here? I want him close by. Any time of the day, any time of the night when this troubling spirit comes, I want David to play the harp next to me. Can you see the irony? David is now God's anointed king, and Saul meets him and welcomes him and loves him as his replacement, even though he doesn't know it yet. He's attracted to David and his character because the Spirit is on him powerfully. Look at verse 23. And so it was, whenever the Spirit from God was upon Saul, that David would take the harp and play it with his hand. Then Saul would become refreshed and well, and the distressing spirit would depart from him. Notice this, the distressing spirit is sent by God, and it's God who sends the one to bring relief. It's God who brings the judgment, and it's God who brings the rescuer from that judgment. God brings the problem, and God brings the solution. And so we've already seen that David, as God's chosen king, is going to be the one who comes and brings relief and brings rescue. And we'll look forward to more of that in the book if you keep reading. Because the spoiler alert is that David and Saul are not always the best friends. In fact, Saul wants to kill him and get rid of him. But what can we see here finally? We can see here that God is committed to his people. His character is seen all over this chapter. He doesn't give us what we deserve. He shows us grace. He doesn't leave the people with a rubbish king. He could have said, you've chosen that king. You're stuck with him. You've rejected me. I'll reject you. But God's not like that. He says, I'm going to give you a king after my own heart who will rescue you and bring relief. That's what God's like. He's committed to his people. And we ultimately see that in how God is committed to us in Jesus. So David is like a big arrow pointing us to Jesus. And in Jesus we see the greatest rescuer who brings relief for us. Because David fails, his heart is not sinless, he fails. And we need a better king than David, don't we? One who is completely in tune with God's heart. Someone who will rescue us from judgment and bring relief. And just as David rescued Saul by playing the harp, so Jesus comes and rescues us by dying on the cross for each one of us. God is for you this morning. He sent David for his people. He sent Jesus for each one of you today. Have you ever had to use the AA? You know who the AA are, don't you? The Fifth Emergency Service. And being a member of the AA comes with certain privileges, including the right to be rescued whenever you're in trouble. Being a member, you can call on the name of your rescuer anytime, day or night, and they will come and bring rescue and relief. If you've ever broken down on the motorway and the car starts smoking, and it's a busy motorway and you're scared and it's dark, and what do you need to do? What a relief it is when you see the AA van and their lights flashing behind you. They've come to rescue me. And it takes humility, doesn't it, to pick up the phone and call the AA and say, I need help. And it takes faith to phone the AA by saying, they're the only ones that can rescue me right now. I need them. And you can phone even if you're not a member. Did you know that? And become a member on the phone and they will come and rescue you still. You know, the Bible says that that's just like Jesus. Romans chapter 10 verse 13. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. You see, today it doesn't matter if you've been in church for years or whether you're new to this. It doesn't matter whether your parents are Christians or not. It's the same for God's rescuer King Jesus today. He wants to save you if you call out on his name. Call out his name. In humility, you might need to say, God, you're the only one that can help me. In trust, saying you died on the cross to forgive me. And he is God's King who will come and rescue you and bring relief. And give you that new heart that we so desperately need. Isn't that good news? Isn't God good to us today? And I trust that 1 Samuel 16 will speak to our hearts and help us as we seek to live for him today.